I'm Phil Parr. It's another exciting edition of Blind Like Me, and I think this is going to be a good one. I think you'll agree. Our guest is Ted Fass from, I guess, you're in Long Island, right?
Yeah, Rockville Center, Long Island.
And lived there all your life? You New Yorker all your life?
New Yorker all my life. I grew up in Queens and then moved out to Rockville Center when I was about 9 years old.
You have that wonderful accent that we us Texans think New Yorkers. I guess you think I have an accent, right?
Yes, I do. Yeah. But it's a nice accent. I like it.
Well, it's it's everybody that lives here, usually most of these folks that live around me talk like this. You know, they make TV into a long, about an eight-syllable word. And I think you said you're 57?
56.
57. We don't want to add a year. When you get that old, every year counts. And what is your level of vision?
Zero.
Absolute zero.
Yes.
And
I'm totally blind since I'm 11.
Since you're 11. What happened at age 11 to cause that?
Age 11, I had a tumor that stopped the blood flow to the optic nerve, and I lost my vision in both eyes.
And up until then, did you know this might happen, or was there a chance of it, or were you just going around thinking you never thought about blindness, or what was?
No, I never thought about it, and I was in sleepaway camp one summer, and I started to get headaches frequently, and one day I was wrestling with somebody in my bunk, and I got a bloody nose, and it wouldn't stop.
Yeah.
And I called home, and they came up and got me because I wasn't the type of kid that complained, because I was definitely into sports at the time, and I wouldn't give up anything, you know, to play ball. So my mother knew that there was definitely something wrong, and she came up to camp, which was upstate New York. Then after that, we saw various doctors. The first doctor I saw was an eye doctor, put the patch on my eye and said, read the chart. And as soon as he closed one eye, I couldn't even see the chart at all.
Oh.
And it was just the start of a lot of different types of doctors until they were able to find that there was a blockage in what they call the nasal pharynx. And the pressure of the tumor was leaning on the optic nerve, so it was a delicate situation how they were going to go about to remove it and hopefully possibly not lose the vision in the other eye, but unfortunately that didn't take place.
Yeah, because I learned the other day that the optic nerve, you cannot reattach it. Once it goes or once it dislocates itself, there's very little you can do.
Well, right now I don't think the technology is where they can regenerate nerves.
Yeah.
Especially the optic nerve, because it's connected to the brain.
But, man, that's coming, isn't it?
Oh, it was rough. It was rough.
Yeah.
You know, I had 11 operations in 1 year.
Really?
And it really wasn't about being blind at the time. It was more or less survival. You know, and then after, you know, I recuperated, it was, you know, just the normal adapting to a sighted world. You know, it was, there wasn't a lot of emphasis really put on the blindness at that time. It was like I was more concerned, and my parents were more concerned about my health.
About your very survival,
correct.
Much less being blinded. We talked to several people that have been deprived as children of, or been given too much oxygen, put in incubators. So in that case, it would be just like yours. It would be a matter of, you know, if the child's not going to survive, a child that survives being blind, that's a miracle. I mean, that's better than nothing. But you remember all this quite well because you were 11 years old.
Right. No, I definitely have a recollection of, you know, colors, you know, textured things. I know what grass looks like. I know what a baseball field looks like, you know, something that's round or square, you know, even shades of colors.
But it must have been a traumatic thing to realize when you got your health back and you were able to go back to school. Here I am. I'm the same, but I'm totally blind.
That's correct.
What a thing.
I would say the hardest part was adapting socially. Because a lot of, when you're that age, 11, 12 years old, it was more of the being accepted socially with your friends. You know, because I at that time was mobility wise would be getting around with other people, and I had to kind of like make them let the blindness be the secondary factor, and they had I tried to make them accept me and be my friend because I had something to offer besides my personality or I tried not to let the blindness aspect get in the way.
Well, kids, 11, 12, 13, young teenagers don't know what to do with themselves, much less some kid that's totally blind. They have no idea.
That's exactly what happened.
And that's the deal about mainstreaming. Oftentimes those kids who are mainstreamed, yeah, and they're in public school, but no one wants anything to do with them.
Right. Well, I was in public school, and, I was able to establish, not that I gave it much thought. It was more or less something that I just wanted. And, I had a lot of friends. Really, it was a small town. And, we did a lot of things just as, regular kids or normal kids, which I don't know what that means, but the average. But I went through high school and I really didn't experience that again until I went to college, because when I went to college, everybody looked at me as being blind first, and they didn't look at me as who I am inside. And that took a couple of weeks, for me to establish, hey, we can go out and have a good time and, go to a bar or go to a movie or go on a date with somebody. Because, I had to have the blindness go away and just show them that there's something else. And once I was able to establish that, which was very difficult in college,
Yeah, because other than being blind, you're a perfectly, I hate to use the word normal, but you're a perfectly normal person other than the fact that you can't see.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's a tough mission.
Yeah.
To show to people. And back then, you're talking about 30 years ago, even 35 years ago, it's much different than the way people looked at people with disabilities back then than they do now.
Oh,
Because now they're much more educated and there's a lot more awareness regarding that.
And but you went on and went through high school in this public school that you were attending before you lost your eyesight?
Well, I went back to the public school, which was at the time I was in sixth grade when this happened. And that in sixth grade, I lost the whole year because I was in the hospital on and off having surgery for different issues that came up. Because when they first removed the tumor, they didn't get it all, and then it grew back, and I had to go back in.
Yeah.
So I lost a year, and then after that, I went back to sixth grade. And from there, they called it at that time junior high, not middle school.
Yeah.
And then into high school in the same town, but it was tough because, before I lost my sight, I was totally involved in Little League baseball and basketball. And then after this happened, a lot of the kids didn't want to be my friend anymore.
That's understandable. They just didn't know what to do with you. They didn't, you can sort of empathize with them. But they never did talk about sending you to a school for the blind with other blind children.
I did go to some of the mobility classes that the local agency provided, but I never really lasted because, I guess at the time, to be honest with you, I was a little bit embarrassed to walk with a cane. And I would get to a certain point in the mobility, and once they wanted to put you on a bus to go shopping, and experience what you would in real life is when I would drop out. I always was able to find a way to get the same thing accomplished, but in a different way. If I didn't want to go to the cafeteria in school at college, I ordered a pizza again. I always traveled with other people, so I had to develop a relationship. So I never used a cane in college or a dog. I always were able to develop relationships with people.
and get somebody.
I'm not saying it was the best way, okay?
Yeah.
But it worked, you know?
Well, you know, people, I have a sighted wife, and people will chastise me sometimes for going. I go everywhere sighted guide. I have a cane. I have several canes, but I very seldom use them, and folks think, you know, I take all the help I can get. I mean, I'm not embarrassed about it. I let anybody wants to lead me somewhere, boy, come on, let's go.
Yeah. Right. No, I agree.
Well, good. And so you made it through high school and graduated, I guess, walked across the stage with the kids that you'd grown up with. What did you think you could do with yourself as a young man, 18 years old, graduated from high school totally blind?
Well, when I graduated college, first of all, when I went to college, I graduated with a psychology and sociology degree. But I had a strong interest in the music business. And I took, private lessons and different things in college, singing and playing the drums. Yeah. And when I graduated college, I was in a band.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going back to, let's say, 1971, 72, in that area. I got married when I was 23, moved up to New York. And I started the first what they call mobile DJ company.
Oh, yeah?
Okay, where they would bring a DJ to a party instead of a band. I was in a band, and one night I was out with some friends, and there was a little local kind of pub, and somebody was just playing records and doing trivia at the bar and playing and doing requests. And I said to my wife and my friends, you know, this would be a great thing at a party instead of the band that I'm in. So I went to a club one night, and I went over to an owner of the club, and I said, how about having a DJ come in here? I live local. I could probably bring about 100 friends with me. You know, it would be something that you might be interested in. About a week later, 2 weeks later, I'm sitting by the phone. It doesn't ring. I'm getting really depressed. Like, you know, here's something that I wanted to do. And, you know, at the time, I did it, you know, at a bar at night. You know, there's a lot of smoke in the room. I walked with my wife, like, with my arm around her shoulder. I didn't walk like I had a problem, because in the beginning, a lot of people don't want to get involved because they're judging first with your disability, not what you're qualified to do.
Yeah.
And about the second weekend, I got a call from this bar owner, and he goes, I spoke to my partner. We've been really busy, and we'd like to hire you to come in and be our DJ. And, you know, I was really excited, and I didn't even know what to do, because I sold something. I didn't even have the equipment. It was just a concept.
Yeah, I was going to say, the equipment to do that at that point in time was an expensive thing and hard to move around.
Not only that, there was no such thing as a DJ equipment. I ended up buying a sophisticated home stereo, and, you know, you couldn't go from song to song because they didn't even have what they call a mixer. At that time, I used to go from a tape deck to a record player.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a little pause in there because it wasn't a clean mix. And I would do the talking, get the people out on the dance floor, and I'd either throw on a record or throw on a tape. And that was the first start of my DJ career. And, you know, as things progressed, we did a lot of prestigious parties in New York for major corporations. You know, within a year, we developed a fairly decent business. We were doing like 30 jobs a month.
Really?
I had to go out and buy a truck, buy real DJ equipment. And that was the whole big start to my career.
So you were playing a record, and during that time you'd plug your headphones into the cassette player and cue it, and then try to get a record cued so that you could have it ready when the tape ended, so you'd have some place to go, so you'd have something to do.
Yeah. Right, because I couldn't make a smooth transition because I didn't have a mixer, and I would talk and welcome everybody to the bar and, you know, come on out on the dance floor. I would name the next song, and by that time I was going to tape from the record.
Yeah.
And while that was playing, I was setting up the record to go to the next one, and that's how we created the DJ business. And
they had mixers, but you couldn't afford one, and you couldn't have moved it if you had one.
Well, to be honest, they didn't. They might have had studio mixers, but they didn't have portable mixers.
Not then, they didn't.
Right.
That was the only way to do it. I had two tape decks that I just went back and forth between.
Right.
I had a deal with a stereo with two auxiliary inputs, and you'd flip the switch and do that kind of stuff. But you had a degree in psychology.
Right.
And here you were out being a disc jockey.
I can't explain it.
Well, I can't either.
I think I used the psychology and the business aspect, when I was talking to clients on the phone.
But had you applied for jobs with your degree, to use your degree?
Not at all.
Not at all?
No, I strictly went from being in a band to the DJ business, and from the DJ business, just expanding that into a variety of different kinds of entertainment.
Well, now, let me ask you this. Your musical ability, did that begin to manifest itself after you lost your eyesight, or were you musically inclined before?
No, I played a little drums, a little trumpet before.
Before you lost your eyesight?
That's correct.
And you became a drummer and a good trumpet player and a good musician after you became blind.
No, I became a better drummer and a fairly decent singer. Uh-huh. I had a band when I was in school. And when I graduated college, I had more of a wedding party dance band. And because the DJ's business grew so quick, I had to quit the band.
Yeah.
I tried to do both of them at the same time, but there were a lot of conflicts.
Well, of course, playing drums and singing is also a hard thing to do. I've done some of that.
It's very hard.
It's pretty difficult. First of all, back then the drummer was back in the back and the monitors were up front. You couldn't hear the band. I mean, you couldn't hear the voice very well. You were sort of singing almost in a vacuum back there.
That's right.
I've done some of that, and it's very hard to do to keep the beat and keep things going because you got both feet, both hands, and your vocal going at the same time, and you've got to keep track of all of it.
Right, exactly.
All right, so you developed this DJ business, and obviously you hired a driver to drive your truck, or did your wife?
Really, my driver was my wife.
Yeah.
Okay, that's how we first started. We both did it together.
Uh-huh.
And what she did is she created the visuals for me. Okay, we got a dance floor, and I would ask questions, how many people are dancing, and, okay, I think they're going to serve dinner now. Maybe we should put on a slow song. So she would help me read the crowd, and she would pick out the records for me.
Wow.
I would say, okay, let's play this, let's play that, and she would pull out the records. I would set it up, and, we had a little team going back and forth because she was kind of my eyes.
Well, and two, if you wanted to play cut three on the side of an album, she would almost have to set the needle for you because there'd be no way.
I basically set the needle because I was listening through the headphone and there was enough time, to be able to do that.
But did you have the records brailled or were you strictly depending on her eyesight?
No, I was strictly depending on her. No, I didn't have them brailled.
See, now with those kids, it's easy to do because you got two CD players and a little mixer from Radio Shack and a couple of powered speakers, and you're there.
Yep. Or they use a laptop or an iPod.
Yeah, a lot of people, I've seen them use their laptop. I know guys that play music that use MIDI files and just sing with them. It's easy to do now, but, it's like us walking 10 miles to school and 10 miles back uphill both ways. Your grandparents always said that.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But
after the DJ business, I went into a lot of other related entertainment business, and now I own an entertainment company where I supply bands, comedians, to casinos, corporations all over the country.
Well, you did some other things, too. When did you get interested in beat baseball?
Beat baseball, we started a Long Island team 10 years ago. This is our 10th anniversary.
Okay, so this was a later thing in life. This entertainment company came first.
Oh yeah, I've been in business in the entertainment business for about 33 years.
Is that right?
Yes.
And you're 56.
Correct.
And so you started this as a young man, and you've been able to earn yourself a living doing this, being in the entertainment business.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's only gotten bigger and better. A lot of different changes with with what's going on in the entertainment business. I don't do a lot of DJ work now. I'm more or less what you would call an agent, where I subcontract out, big bands, headline entertainers that might open up for, a corporate event, a comedian, I've worked with Ray Charles, the Beach Boys, We just did a big show with Lewis Black, who is a comedian.
Uh-huh.
I represent a lot of tribute bands. Tribute bands, I don't know if you know what that is, but
sure.
it's a band. Sometimes they look like the original band, or they sound like them. Okay, but they play other music, like I have a Rolling Stones, a Bee Gees, Rod Stewart, and I represent a lot of those groups, and they play all over the country.
And they do the artists, like if it was the Grateful Dead, they do all Grateful Dead songs, and they'd look like them, and you'd think you were watching the Grateful Dead
exactly.
If you didn't know the difference, if you didn't know
that's correct.
What did you call them again?
Tribute bands.
Tribute bands.
Like they're doing a tribute to the group or the band. And sometimes visually they look like them, but there are a lot of tribute bands that just sound like the group.
Yeah. Have you ever worked in the field that you were trained for? Have you ever been able to use that degree in psychology for anything?
Not to earn a living, only to help me on an everyday basis, you know, when you're bringing up your children or in a work environment, but never, to earn a living from it.
In other words, you've never worked as a psychologist or been in a situation where you were using that degree other than just for personal uses?
No, not at all.
That's amazing. Do you regret getting it?
No, because I'm successful. So, you know, I don't regret it. You know, a lot of kids who go to college, even today, they don't know the direction that they want to do when they first do it.
Well, yeah, how could you, at age 20, how could you know anything?
Let me
think about it, you know.
Well, yeah, but it's not even 20. You know, you go to college, you're 18 years old, and, 4 years, hopefully. And that was my interest at the time. I had an interest in music, but I didn't think that's what I was going to end up being in the entertainment business.
Yeah, because you have no idea what life is going to hand you or which direction your life is going to take when you're that old, so you might as well go get a degree in something that
right.
you're sort of interested in. So this is what you've done since you graduated college and decided to do DJ work. This is what you've done, has been in the entertainment business.
That's correct.
You just grew that company, and now it is, I would say, well, I know you have a lady who answers the phone and puts you on hold, and you hear the comedian, so it's obviously you have an office.
No, I have an office. I have 5 employees.
How many? 5 employees?
Five. Yes.
What do they do?
Telemarketing. We do a lot of work on the internet, you know. Trying to get new clients, researching and sourcing out new entertainment, because I'm only as good as the people that I represent.
Yeah.
With the way that the computer world is today, people would rather email than talk on the phone.
Oh, much rather. It's email is the preferred method of communication for many people.
And my strength is talking on the phone with a client. Asking questions, being able to guide them and assist them in what I feel would work the best for their event. And that's very hard to convey when you do an email, especially because I don't use the computer. So anything that I do, I have to dictate it to somebody in the office to do it. And, even when you call people on the phone, they don't respond back on the telephone. But if you email them, you get a response in a minute.
Well, why do you shun computers? What is the difference?
No, I'm not against them. I have 2 different computers that I use to, for my contacts, for all my telephone leads and people that I want to call, but I don't use, email and, do any other work on the computer.
Why is that? You just didn't want to take the time to learn it or don't want to? Or?
I don't have the time to learn it.
Well, it can be daunting, I'll agree.
I mean, if there was a need, I would do it. But,
yeah.
You know, once again, I found another way, you know, that's why I have people who work for me. And, you know, I found another way to accomplish the same thing. I don't really find it that it's getting in my way.
But you have people to do that, so why? What's the point, right?
Right. Yeah, well, plus it's a lot of time. It's a lot of time to sit down and actually master it. Like I said, if it was necessary and it hurt me in any way, I would just do it.
Uh-huh.
I would find the time.
Yeah. How do you find clients? Do they come to you, or how do you find a client base? How do you find people that are interested in buying what you have to sell?
Well, after doing it for 30-some-odd years, we have a client base of people that I work with every year. And then people who see me at different events, you know, come up and ask for a card. A lot of it is recommendation. And then I do a lot of mailings to different marketplaces, different corporations, in the summertime, parks and festivals throughout the United States. I go to various trade shows that are geared towards a specific marketplace. I have, you know, brochures. I have a website. And we're constantly doing that to try
You do have a website.
Sure.
Yeah. And you put together the you have, I guess, several people who are signed up. You are their agent. And
I don't have anybody that I'm signed up exclusively for as an agent, but I could get any performer in the country.
So you have a roster of people that you can get, and you try to match the entertainer to the event, the price that they're willing to pay, what type of entertainer they want.
Right. Somebody might email me a request looking for so-and-so as a comedian for their fundraising event. And they might email me a couple of people, and then they might find out that they're not in their budget. And then it's my job to come up with some people that would be in their budget and send them the promotional material, maybe a DVD. There are some people that have no idea what they're looking for. Then it's my job to come up, you know, ask them the right questions and come up with the right form of entertainment that they would be interested in.
Yeah. Is there a registry of these sorts of companies like yours somewhere? That someone can find a list if you wanted to look for your company? I mean, is there? There's not a big, massive database of some kind of companies that do what you
no.
do?
No. There's no database that lists the type of thing that I do.
So it is a lot of word of mouth. A lot of people that have used you say, oh, well, call Ted. He'll find somebody for you. He'll get so-and-so for you.
Yes. Yeah, that's what happens. But a lot of jobs, I'm able to, like I said, that might be a trade publication that have the festivals that are listed throughout the summertime. There are festivals all throughout the country.
And so you call those people and say, hey, could I help
right.
you? Okay, I got it. What if I got it in my head, say that I wanted to book. Just either Reba McEntire for you
okay.
know do you know who she is?
Sure.
If I wanted to book Reba McEntire for a show in Lufkin, Texas, you could do that for me.
Correct. And what I would do is I would find out the date, what kind of an event, get in touch with her management company. If you had the budget for that, the procedure would be okay. I would say, Phil, it's X amount of dollars for her. Is that in your budget? And you go, yeah. And then it would be up to you to make an offer. That's the way the terminology within the industry. And you would make an offer stating that, you know, you would like to hire her on such and such a date for X amount of money. And then I would send it into her agent. And if they approved it, then we would go to contract.
And yours is strictly a commission. I mean, you get a percentage of the art.
I don't get a percentage from them. I get a base price, and I usually add on a percentage. Because a lot of times it's not just for the act. You might need me to supply the sound, the lighting, make the arrangements for all their flights, their room reservations, hospitality. So that it's not just an agency where I buy and sell entertainment. It's a service where I can provide all the production and you don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
And if necessary, somebody from my staff or myself will be at the event to coordinate it for you.
And you get that base price from the client, from the person who wants the entertainer?
I get the base price from the client, and then I go to the exclusive agency that represents that act, and then they speak to the management company, and if they accept the offer based on dollars and fits into their schedule geographically, That's basically the way that the whole process works.
And you get some of that? You get a percentage of that of what the entertainer would get or not?
Well, if the entertainment cost $100,000, I might charge $110,000. And that $10,000 would be my commission.
Would be yours. Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And out of
that, whatever administrative fees, you know, expenses that I had, that would be what I would make on the job. Now, I might add more than 10%, depending on the amount of work. If I had to, like I told you, do all the hotels, their ground transportation from the airport back and forth,
uh-huh.
You know, then it's not just an easy sell. There's a lot of time and hours that the people in the office would have to put in to coordinate that, so I might add a little bit more.
So to have an event, all I have to have is the idea, and you'll do everything else.
That's correct.
That's correct.
And if you don't have the idea and you need ideas, then I could create them as well.
I bet you can. What an interesting business. I guess something new every day. Something different, something new, a new problem, a new wrinkle, a new thing to work on every day.
All the time. That's why I like getting up in the morning and going to work. It's a lot of fun.
Because there's something different to do. How do you get to work? Do you ride the subway, or how do you navigate around New York?
I only live about 5 minutes away from my office.
So you walk?
No. If I walk, that would be with somebody else because I don't use a cane.
Yeah.
I have one. Sometimes I have employees of mine that pick me up and then take me home.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I stay in the evening, and then my wife meets me here, and then uh-huh. You know, we do the bills and everything once a week.
Yeah. Do you have the same wife?
Yes, same thing. Married 33 years.
So this is the lady who started the company with you.
The DJ company, yes.
Yeah.
But we don't work together anymore. She has her own job. We did work for many years. But then she wanted to, she didn't like the pressure of owning your own business.
Really? So she went to work for someone?
Right. So she does special events for a nonprofit organization.
Is that right?
Yes.
Because that's the business she knows.
Well, you know, that's what we developed. You know, we were in the event business for a long time. Doing events for private corporations and private people. Is a little different than doing nonprofit fundraising events, but it definitely is an asset, you know, in terms of the background, what she had, no question about it.
To know what she knows and to have been in the business she was in for all those years would definitely help her in doing what she does. Well, life goes on, and you keep booking entertainers, and this is the only job you've ever had.
This is the only job that I ever had, working for myself.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about Beat Baseball. How'd you get interested in that, and how'd all that get started?
Beat Baseball, it was something, honestly, the first time that I ever went out there, it made me feel like I was back in Little League when I was able to sit. It was a great feeling. When I was in Little League, I played third base. I was a little short little kid. Wasn't a very good batter. I don't know if that was because I had a problem with my eyes and I didn't know it at the time.
Yeah.
But I could lay down a bunt and score, okay, because I was real quick. I'd get to first, I'd steal second, I'd steal third. And I was a really good fielder. Hitting was not my strength. I was just fast, and I was an excellent defensive player, and I also had played basketball. But, you know, that only was up to my age 11 before I got sick.
Yeah.
Baseball came about... Stephen Guerra, who we had talked about before we started the interview, told me about it, and we started it up, Stephen and I, and one volunteer, and then we started to look around and recruit other blind people in Long Island, got some other volunteers to be involved, and before we knew it, we developed the Long Island Bombers.
The Long Island Bombers.
Our initial goal was to educate the public about blindness.
Uh-huh.
And what Stephen and I created was a different way to play beat baseball against sighted people. In other words, I would go out and I got in contact with the Jets, New York Jets, the football team.
Uh-huh.
And what we did is when the Jets were up at bat, we blindfolded them. And it was their job. In deep baseball, you get four swings, and you're able to take one pitch. And what we did is, after the third swing, we would let them take off their blindfold if they didn't hit the ball, and then hit the ball and listen to the base buzz, and then they would have to run to the base blindfolded. And we just changed the rules around to make it more of an educational component to create the public awareness, you know, of what it was like to play baseball being blind. And it was very successful. We did it with a lot of corporations. We still do it. And it's an amazing experience. We did it last week at a high school. And we just didn't even really even play the game. We did one inning where they played defense, and we got up at bat.
Uh-huh.
And afterwards, we just let 50 high school kids just get up right in a row because they just love to try to hit the ball and run to the base. But it's a very funny experience because when you hit a ball, you're playing baseball, and you have 50 of your friends in the stands, their normal reaction is to start screaming and clapping. Well, if you start screaming and clapping, then the person who just hit the ball and has a blindfold on can't hear the base, and he's running in circles.
That's true. Absolutely.
So, you know, it's a natural instinct to cheer if somebody gets a hit, but you have to almost take a golf mentality where you have to be very quiet until after the ball is hit, and then you can, you know, applaud or whatever. But it's in baseball, it's every single time they just clap. We make signs, quiet, please. And the kids just had a great time, so we didn't even play a game. We just let them get up and bat and run just for the experience, and they loved it.
And the kids were blindfolded when they did this?
The kids were blindfolded when they got up at bat, and they were able to take three swings blindfolded to see if they were able to connect with the ball, which most of the time you can't.
Yeah.
Then we let them take the blindfold up, put it on their forehead, hit the ball sighted, but then they have to put the blindfold back onto their eyes and run to the base that is buzzing, which is in beat baseball is either first base or third base because there is not a second base.
And when the ball is hit, the guy that's at that base turns the buzzer on.
No, there's somebody behind home plate that turns the buzzer on randomly. You don't know which it's going to be, first or third.
Uh-huh.
You have to stop for a second, listen, and then go. You know, we're trained that way, but a sighted person is not, and that's the whole purpose of our exercise.
Yeah. Now, back to the New York Jets. You got them to agree to do this blindfolded?
Yes.
That's amazing in and of itself.
Yeah, we did it with the Jets, and we've done it with the Islanders, the hockey team.
Yeah, because the Jets are a big deal. I mean, they're big stars there. They're guys who make millions of dollars playing.
And they were just unbelievably blown away from the experience of doing this. I mean, you know, if I remember a quote that they said, it's just, you know, that they take so much for granted every day.
Yeah.
And this experience just brought them back to reality.
And this was to emphasize that blind people are normal, or that blind people can play baseball, or that what was the point?
Well, none of us are really normal.
No, that's true.
Okay.
I got you there.
Okay, except that yes, it's to show that blind people, you know, and this is my motto. I mean, if there's something that you want to do, you could do it. You know, it's just persistence.
Yeah.
You just have to find a way to do it.
Matter of figuring out a way to do it as a blind person.
That's correct.
Yeah, that's what your job is, if you're blind, is to try to figure out how to do what you want to do without sight.
Right, and that's what I did. Like I said, I don't use any of the, a cane or a dog or whatever. I mean, and I'll say it over again. I don't know if I'm doing it the right way, but it's my way, and it's getting the job done.
And so these high school kids love this. I mean, they had a good time trying to hit the ball blind, folded.
Everybody loves it, whether it's high school, if it's a corporation, an organization that we do it for, and everybody who we play invites us back again the next year. That's how excited they get. Unfortunately, it's very hard to get the awareness, you know. You know, I would love to be able to get in touch with Major League Baseball, and I think every baseball team in every state should sponsor a blind baseball people team.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's not a lot of money. I mean, some of these players get fined that amount of money every day.
Yeah.
And they would be doing it for a great cause.
Well, being in the business that you're in, if anybody could get that done, you would think you could.
Well, that's what I'm working on now. I have some things in the making right now where I'm going to meet with some people and try to get that done. Because there are people, teams throughout the United States, but I think we need to be affiliated with somebody like Major League Baseball.
Yeah, from the top down, that you need to, that needs to be done. Well, you would be the logical person to get that sort of thing set up. Let me ask you this: what and you beat baseball, and you what do? You contact a high school and say, "Would you like to do?" How do you get a high school involved?
I think that they just happen to go on our website and see it. Usually that's the way it happens, or we're at an event and somebody knows somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, our season starts in April and usually ends in September. So we don't do that many of them because a lot of our volunteers have full-time jobs. A lot of the players have full-time jobs. So time-wise,
yeah.
We would have to give up a weekend, and that's when we usually practice because we have two big events that we attend to each year. One is the Long Island Classic is something that we created. This is our third anniversary this year where we play three other blind beat baseball teams, one from Chicago, one from Boston, and one from Philly, and we have a tournament at Hofstra College.
Uh-huh.
And then the other event that we do is the World Series, where blind teams compete other teams throughout the United
from
States.
From all over. And that's going to be in Houston this year, right?
That's correct, yeah.
That is in Houston. What? When is that?
It's the end of July, beginning of August.
Beginning of August. Well, have you ever been in Texas in August?
Yes, I have, and I know what the temperature is. It's rough.
Buddy, it's going to be hot. It's going to
yep.
be hot playing baseball. You're blindfolded. It'll be miserable. But I'm going to try to come down and meet some of you folks live and do some recording of that, and maybe have it on this show. So that's in late July, early August, and you play teams from how many beat baseball teams will be there? Do you think?
To be honest with you, I don't really know the answer to that, but
no.
I would say somewhere maybe between 12 and 15.
12 and 15 beat baseball. All those blind people, that's a lot of blind people in one place.
Right. I think that we're one of the only teams that does the educational
yeah.
component,
yeah.
going out and playing with sighted teams.
Yeah.
You know, because I think the other teams more concentrate on the competition
yeah.
of various tournaments that take place through the summertime.
Yeah.
To play, you know, because there's nothing like playing beat ball against another blind team. Because then everybody's on the same
yeah.
level.
Everybody's level then. Everybody's the playing field is, as they would say, the playing field is level then, isn't it?
That's correct.
To other blind
yep.
people.
And the
All
competition's
right.
great.
Give us a website for your company if anybody would like to get in touch with you, maybe visit with you and thinking about getting in the business you're in or whatever, would like to get a hold of you or your company. How do they do that?
The website is actually my name. It's Ted, T-E-D, Fass, F-A-S-S, .com, www.tedfass.com.
Tedfass.com. And what is at that website? Do you know? What is there?
Oh, sure, I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
My website just is all the different forms of entertainment, whether it be bands, whether it be comedians, different ethnic acts, if somebody was doing an Italian night or they needed a mariachi group, if they were having a carnival or a casino at the event for a fundraising event, any kind of form of entertainment that you could possibly imagine is on my website.
TEDFASS.com?
Yes, sir.
TedFast.com, that will get you to Ted's website. All right, sir, thank you much, and we'll let you get back to booking acts and doing your job, and I'll give you a clue as to when we're going to run this, and you can go to ACB Radio and listen to it. Ted, thank you very
Great.
Much.
Thank you.
All right.
In the highest place in love, what the soul and mind is set change for.
Side two. Please. please change side selector switch and turn the cassette over? No, I said that. I just did. God, I'll be so glad when I never have to hear those words again. Won't that be great?
Yes, it will.
Nick G is with us. Nick G, haven't seen you or talked to you since back in the days of the snowman.
Arrgh! Those are incriminating to my very soul!
They were. It was great. Those are great times. We knew. So much has changed since then. So many things have happened since then. The internet.
You ain't hitting.
Everybody has broadband now. Everybody has digital recorders. Just in the last 5 years, millions of things have changed. And changed for you because you were 12 then and you're 18 now.
Indeed.
All grown up. Going to college, cutting out of high school.
Yep.
You never went to public school. I mean, you never went to blind school, did you?
No, I never did.
You always went to public school. How was your, in high school, did you, listen.
Good afternoon. It is 3:22 p.m.
That's to remind me to call you. That's my four-alarm watch. In high school, how was high school? Did you have a social life, or were you isolated, or how was high school?
Chosen isolation, to be honest with you. I mean, I talked to people and stuff like that in school only. That's just by choice. I always like to keep my in-school and out-of-school life somewhat separate.
And there would have been other people who were interested in computers like you, though, if you had sought them.
Not nearly.
Not as interested.
Nope. There are a lot of people who like computers, but I didn't see anybody, doing the stuff that I've been doing lately.
Yeah, nobody knew how to do that. And so you remained isolated, but you did you graduated. Did you go to graduation, or did you skip it all? Skip it.
Later. Considering that I at the last year I was rather on the outs with my class.
Yeah.
I did kind of skip graduation. I mean, I did have some friends in high school, but most of them were above me or below me grade wise. You know, I mean, I had some people that I could talk to and be on good terms with.
Well, for an 18-year-old boy, you have a nice, certainly nice voice. You do. You work at it, though. What?
It's better than what it used to sound like. You know, it's better than sounding like this. Seriously.
Well, you did. You sounded. But you were so. I thought about you 1,000 times because you were so on fire. You were so. You just seemed to have such good spirit and wanting to be grown and wanting to learn and just. Dun, 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 you were just happy. I just loved you. Anyway, so. You've continued to be a computer person, and I guess you're taking some form of computer science in college.
Business Computer Information Systems.
Which means what? You'll be able to do what?
No, it's a broad computers-based degree. It covers some programming. It covers some, not necessarily computer science, but it's... We can cover some programming, it covers some administration, it covers the way the internet works. It's a pretty broad thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is at what college?
Farmingdale State College. It's local.
Which is in, are you in New York City or New York?
Long Island, New York.
Well, you're in Long Island. That's, that's weird because I interviewed another guy in Long Island who has an entertainment company. His name is Ted something. He has an entertainment company there. Do you know Stephen Guerra, who lives there?
Of course.
Everybody.
He works on. He broadcasts on my internet radio station.
Oh, does he? That's right. You told me that. He does his little sports sort of show on your...
It's all about sports.
It's all about sports. Brought to you by...
Yep.
Anyway, we'll discuss that. This radio thing that you're involved with is called what? You told me, but I forgot.
It's called HKC Radio, and it's at www.hkcradio, all one word, .com.
And it's all free.
Yep, it's all free.
And I think you said that it was mostly blind people, but not exclusively blind people.
Exactly. And that's in broadcasters and in content. We try not to be blind radio and content. I mean, there's one broadcaster who likes to do the whole technology news and talk about some of the blindness-related issues, but the rest of us don't want to step on his toes.
Why don't don't see anything wrong with that. I used to really enjoy. Remember when Jonathan Mosen read the technology news for the week and everything that had to do with technology? I thought it was really a neat kind of a thing to do. I learned things that I didn't normally know. And, of course, now that what happened? This is the second time today. That's the Skype ringing. I'm going to leave this on. This is the second time today Skype has dumped me out.
Mm-hmm.
Why would that? Why would that be?
Internet problems.
You think internet?
Either on your end, on the ISP's end, or something in between you and Skype.
Okay. But then the other night I fed my brother-in-law a ball game on Skype for 3 hours, and it never dropped out. It did just, so you just never know, I guess, do you?
You don't. Sometimes it works, sometimes it just doesn't.
It's the internet, so sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question about Skype. You seem to I guess you use it a lot and know a lot about it. When I do the edit, where you're typing in a phone number or a name or something, every time I start typing, I'll do plus one, then I'll do the first two or three numbers, and it tries to take me to some number I've dialed before. How can
just
I
keep
stop that?
Typing.
Why, no, just keep typing and then go hunt the edit box.
No, you don't even have to go hunt the edit box. Just keep typing.
Yeah.
You just keep typing as if it's a regular edit.
That's just annoying. There's no way
it is, but there's nothing you could stop. There's no way to make it stop going there.
Well, you would know. There's no way to turn off that, is there?
Nope.
No, maybe in future versions of Skype there will be hope.
Except for the fact that for the majority of its Skype's user base, it's useful, so they won't get rid of that.
Because most people, it's a number you've dialed before, and you'll go ahead and say, yeah. You know, the best, what I do now is I'll cut and paste a number. If you do that, it seems to work better. If you just cut it, put it from the clipboard, and then take the number over there and paste it in, it seems to work all right that way.
That works beautifully.
Yeah. All right, back to your radio station. You don't, you do blindness news sometimes, but you don't talk about being blind, and you don't mention being blind on the air. So anyone who listened would never know that most of you are blind persons.
The only way they would know is if they were, heard our keyboards going off, because, a lot of sighted people use mice.
Yeah.
Or if we were having issues. Once we have issues, it comes right out.
I guess it does, because they would hear Jaws talking in the background. Or what do you use? You Jaws or Window Eyes?
I use Jaws. Most of us put Jaws through a pair of headphones one way or another.
Yeah.
But when we have issues, we'd like to tell people what's going on. So I'm having Jaws just died.
Yeah. Well, that's the way people do things now. Things are more honest. Things are, in this kind of radio, on internet radio, they tend to do things up front. Like, I'm going to leave that dropout on of Skype where I redialed you. I was careful not to cuss or anything.
Okay.
So I'm going to leave it. Because that's, people need to know that.
First thing, HKCRadio.com is an uncensored project.
Okay.
So we support free speech within reason, of course.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want somebody to go on and say, "Hey, Hitler was a good guy." No, I wouldn't want that either.
Well, unless they thought he was,
But I wouldn't want that either. I'd cut you off immediately because it's like, no.
Yeah.
Not gonna even debate that one.
So there may be a little raw speech there, an occasional.
Yes. As a matter of fact, there will be a little raw speech there. We don't pride ourselves on saying the F word as many times as we possibly can, but we don't inhibit ourselves either.
Yeah, this guy was doing mornings in Birmingham, and he was wanting to be funny. And I said, if you really want to be funny and outlandish and gain listeners, just say the F word every 30 minutes. I guarantee you'll have everybody in town listening. But that's not humor. That's not funny.
No, it isn't.
Nothing humorous about that. All right, what are you going to do when you get out of college? Do you have any idea? Are you just wandering around?
I want to get a job in the computing field. I like system administration, and I like building and designing computers. I am not, I don't have a programmer's mind, but then again, that could always change.
Yeah.
And And anything can always change. I mean, I've already said if computers have never worked out, one thing I would love to do is be a history teacher, but I've been discouraged from that.
Oh, I think that would be great. I'm reading a book about, as a matter of fact, at this moment, about John Hancock, who was very involved in the revolution, in the forming of this nation, and very few people know much about him. So I just thought it would be interesting to research him, and I ran across a book, so I'm reading
that. Yeah, some people know this, some people don't, but, you know, John Hancock wasn't just a rebel. He was a merchant. You know, I mean,
very wealthy merchant.
Yes. So this was not just a poor man's effort. I mean, there were a lot of wealthy people involved in this, in the revolution, and some people will take that for granted.
Well, he funded many of the revolutionary activities that happened. He was he was kind of on both sides. He was playing both ends against the middle. He because what he wanted to do was make money. He wasn't as caught up in revolutionary spirit as some. He wanted to make money, and he did off both sides. He supplied the British troops with food and clothes and uniforms and things, and he also funded the rebels. So playing both ends against the middle, but that's a long time ago. What kind of microphone do you have? It sounds really good.
Well, if you talk to Derek Lane the first time, you'll remember he was talking into a CAD GXL 2400.
Uh-huh.
I got one after he got one.
Because you heard his and you thought, wow, that's good. That's really good.
That's good for the price.
What is the price?
Anywhere from $61 to $79, depending on where you look.
And this is a microphone that requires some phantom power of some kind?
Yep, 48 volts, 3 milliamps though. It doesn't need the it doesn't need 8 milliamps like some of the some other microphones that CAD makes. Please excuse me. I don't actually. Somebody else downstairs answered it.
That was your home phone ringing there, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes,
you're upstairs in your lair up there.
Yes, I am.
Away from your parents. Your parents. I'd love to meet your parents. I'm going to come to Long Island and meet you. I'd love to. Your parents have got to be neat people. To put up with you, they'd have to be, wouldn't they? You know?
I'll put it this way. They spawned me, didn't they?
Yeah. All right, exactly. All right, Nick G., thank you, sir. We're going to probably run this weekend in conjunction with another guy, and wish you good luck and hope that you will, at least if you decide not to do Blind Like Me, report to us every year, let us know how you're doing. You're going to do well at something. I guarantee that.
That's the hope.
You're too bright not to, sir. Hold on just a minute, all right?